The Tuesday morning show on KAXE. It is just about 8 o'clock. I'm Jennifer Barr with John Latimer.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
Some dense fog and drizzle possible yet this morning, then gradually becoming sunny. Highs 76 to 82 today with light north winds. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the upper 50s, and for tomorrow, dense fog once again in the morning, otherwise mostly sunny, highs near 81. And looking ahead to Thursday, mostly sunny, highs 80 to 85, slight chance for afternoon showers in the Bemidji area. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we're going to talk with Tornado Bob Konzemius. We'll get the big weather picture from him. If you've got any questions for him, text us 218-326-1234.
We'd be happy to hear from you, and Bob will do his best to answer your questions. And believe me, Bob's best is pretty darn good. The guy's really sharp on this stuff.
He is a PhD in meteorology, I believe. Is that correct?
Physics or meteorology or both, I don't know. But yeah, he's definitely had some schooling. And he works in the field, and so he knows whereof he speaks.
That's right. Also coming up at about 8:40, we're going to learn about traditional ecological knowledge. Our guest will be Ben Benoit with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Division of Resource Management. Then at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters. Malachi Coons will be your host for that.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. President Trump says he has begun to arrange a meeting between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Russian President Vladimir Putin to discuss bringing an end to Russia's war in Ukraine. He said he called Putin after yesterday's meeting at the White House with Zelensky. European leaders were also present. French President Emmanuel Macron praised the U.S. commitment to security guarantees for Ukraine as a key outcome. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer also welcomed that development.
The agreement that the coalition of willing countries, that's 30 countries already working together on security guarantees, will now work with the US on those guarantees, coordinating, and we have already commissioned our teams to do the detailed further work on that.
But he said many issues remain, including the exchange of prisoners and the return of Ukrainian children kidnapped by Russia during the war. The FBI is adding Missouri's attorney general to its ranks. As St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum reports, Andrew Bailey comes to the investigative agency after a controversial tenure in Missouri.
Bailey is resigning in September to become the FBI's co-deputy director alongside Dan Bongino. After getting appointed as Missouri's attorney general in 2022, Bailey attracted nationwide controversy after he unsuccessfully sought to bar transgender adults from accessing gender-affirming care. He's also sought to preserve Missouri's abortion restrictions after voters there passed a constitutional amendment protecting abortion rights. Bailey is joining the FBI amid a firestorm over its handling of files related to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. For NPR News, I'm Jason Rosenbaum in St. Louis.
Former Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown officially launched his return to politics yesterday. He had lost his Senate seat to a Republican in November. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports the longtime Democrat was a top recruit to try to flip a red seat blue in the Senate.
Republican Bernie Moreno defeated Brown in 2024. Now Brown is facing Ohio Senator John Husted, who is running to serve the final 2 years of former Senator and now Vice President J.D. Vance's seat. Brown says in a video posted on social media, he'll stand up for workers.
I didn't plan to run for office again, but when I see what's going on, I know I can do something about it for Ohio. That's why I'm running for Senate.
The Senate GOP campaign arm argued Brown's, quote, radical agenda is out of step with the state, and he will be rejected again by voters. Republicans hold a three-seat majority, and Democrats face a tough map to defend incumbents and pick up four seats to retake control of the chamber. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News in Washington. The strike against Air Canada is in its fourth day. Flight attendants walked off the job Saturday morning after their union rejected the latest contract offer. The government had ordered the workers back to work, and the Labor Board declared yesterday the strike is illegal. But the union says the strike is still on, but it says the two sides have resumed negotiations. The strike is affecting about 130,000 travelers a day at the peak of the summer travel season. In parts of rural Kenya, roughly 40 of every 1,000 babies die before they turn a year old. But as NPR's Jonathan Lampert reports, new research suggests simply giving households extra money could cut that rate by half.
From 2014 to 2017, the nonprofit GiveDirectly gave $1,000 to over 10,000 of the most cash-strapped households across Western Kenya. A team of researchers followed those households and found that cash made a big difference for those that had kids. Not only did infant mortality drop by nearly half, but 45% fewer children died before they turned five. The benefits were highest among households who got cash right around the time of birth and who lived within 30 minutes of a healthcare facility. Those reductions are about in line with more established interventions like anti-malarial drugs or vaccines. Jonathan Lambert, NPR News.
Health officials in Texas say the measles outbreak is over. 762 cases have been reported since January, with nearly 100 hospitalized. Two children died. They say the last outbreak-related measles case was reported on July 1st. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.
It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Thanks for listening to People Powered KAXE and the Tuesday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr with John Latimer.
Good morning. We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
We also receive support from Bemidji Pride, announcing their annual festival for the LGBTQIA2S+ community and their allies at Rail River Folk School in Bemidji, August 23rd, with a family-friendly daytime festival Saturday, noon to 5, featuring vendors and music. More event information at BemidjiPride.com.
The Lauren Presbyterian Church invites you to their 34th annual Carnival Festival, Saturday, August 23rd from 11 to 2. The church is located on Scenic Highway 7 north of Taconite. Enjoy corn on the cob, barbecue sandwiches, and more. There's also a silent auction, live music, and a bake sale.
And Walker Bay Theater presents On Golden Pond August 20th through the 24th. Shows are at 3 p.m. Wednesday and Sunday, and then Friday and Saturday shows are at 7. Located in downtown Walker on Minnesota Avenue, tickets are available at the door.
There will be a grand opening for the new Keewatin Nashwauk School Wednesday, August 20th from 3 until 6. The school is preschool through 12th grade and is located in Nashwauk.
And we are gearing up for Grand Rapids Riverfest. It is less than 3 weeks away now, Saturday,
yeah.
September 6th. This year's lineup, Courtney Barnett, Margot Price, Jeremy Albino, and Alan Sparhawk. Find tickets and more information at GrandRapidsRiverfest.com. We're still looking for a few volunteers as well. If you click on Get Involved at GrandRapidsRiverfest.com, you can find out more. Right now, we're going to hear some music from our headliner, Courtney Barnett. This goes back to her 2018 album called Tell Me How You Really Feel, and this song's called Charity.
Charity.
That is Courtney Barnett. She will be in Grand Rapids, playing right in front of the Grand Rapids Area Library on Saturday, September 6th, as part of Grand Rapids Riverfest. Find your tickets and more info at grandrapidsriverfest.com. It is 8:14. It's the Monday morning, or Tuesday morning.
Yeah. So catch up. I'm here. It's got to be Tuesday.
And Tornado Bob's here, which means it's Tuesday. So, yes, I've now
a lot of reinforcement for Tuesday.
Yeah, got my head on straight now. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
John. Yep.
Say, I want to start off with a wonderful experience I had this past week, Saturday. I was out. I was headed for the lake. I was going to go for a swim, and I glanced up at the sky. And the clouds, they weren't complete. It wasn't a covering. There were some openings where you could see blue sky, but they were in waves, kind of undulating up and down and up and down. And it was lovely. It was beautiful to behold. But right away, my mind went to, what kind of physics is making this happen? So I don't know if you're ready to talk about clouds this early in the morning, but what was happening there? Why was I seeing why were these waves appearing?
Well, a lot of times there's some like waves in the atmosphere, and what they're called a lot of times those are called apparatus, sort of a wavy like motion going on at the there's an interface between just a little stable air, just a stable layer right there, where there's warm air, warm humid air above dry, drier, cooler air. And so you see at that interface, you see a bit of wavy motion.
Yeah, it was stunning. And it appeared to be kind of moving along, although I was doing the moving probably. But they were definitely up and down and up and down and smooth. You know, more like the wave you'd see, you know, if you were modeling some kind of a, I don't know, what it might be, it's a sine wave of some sort, but just gentle waves and beautiful. And you say that there was cold air underneath and warm air over the top. Now, were they be in a contrasting direction to one another, or would they all be moving along and just get this kind of up and down motion going? It's like there was this turbulence.
There's usually some wind shear too. Sometimes they can move right along about a similar speed. In a lot of cases, I think what we may have had is like easterly winds at low levels. And
definitely an east wind. I remember because when I was swimming, it was pretty windy on Pekegama, and over in the mine pit where I swim, it was pretty calm. A lot of protection from the east. So yeah, it was an east wind.
All right. Yeah. We've had a lot of that lately. So, just with the, and then the interesting other thing is, with our pattern we've had is a lot of rain in southern Minnesota and dry weather around Grand Rapids in northeastern Minnesota. So it's been very, very contrasty week in terms of rainfall. With for example, like the maximum rainfall over the past few days was down near Waseca in southern Minnesota, where they had 10 inches, much of that fell over Saturday night, and or maybe that Sunday night. Anyway, Saturday night they had that whole bunch Saturday night, and then also into Sunday. It was like a two-day, multiple-day rain event. In fact, Friday, Saturday, Sunday very rainy in southern Minnesota, and I had nothing at my house. There might have been some scattered, light. You know, showers. I think one week, this week, I had literally a 1 minute thunderstorm. I was lucky because like that thing came right over. Well, I mean, it came right over Grand Rapids. I think it hit more at downtown, just a few blocks to the north, And my house had, you know, it rained for 1 minute, one rumble of thunder, and then that was it. It was done. So that was pretty much the highlight of my weather week.
Yeah. I had a couple of bolts of lightning and some thunder on, I think, Saturday night, and nothing. Nothing in the rain gauge. No catch.
Yeah, I generally find, like, in northern Minnesota, the storms are very isolated and pretty weak usually, so that if you hear thunder, you're not likely to get much rain.
I've got a couple of questions. Since we're talking about rain, east winds usually precludes or presages rain, but you know, we had that strong wind from the east and we didn't get any rain out of it. What was going on there?
What usually happens in the summer for us is, the winds come off Lake Superior. It's of course a lot of water there, but it's really, at this time of year, it's not a great source of moisture for us because that water is on the cool side. It doesn't really add much moisture to the air. In fact, maybe it even takes it away slightly here. It's pretty neutral. Because the air is already humid enough in the summertime that it doesn't. If you have water that's like say 50 in the 50s, and the dew point's already in the 60s, you're not going to add water to the air if the 60 degree dew point air is coming over 50 degree dew point water, 50 degree water. So there really a lot of times, and then there's not heating going on, so you're not really adding instability, and that's what really fuels things in the summertime. So we get this stable layer of kind of relatively dry air coming off of Lake Superior. And the combination of the lake and the terrain topography over Minnesota, there's also higher terrain off of western Minnesota and southwestern Minnesota. So that tends to point the more unstable and humid air, kind of keep it to the south and into southern Minnesota, and to allow thunderstorms to develop in, I'd say, the eastern Dakotas into western Minnesota, and then move kind of southeastward from there. And a lot of times in the summertime, we also have this upper level ridge that's around us, or maybe just around, just to the west. And flow around that will kind of direct the thunderstorms more towards southern Minnesota. So this is our kind of the way our patterns are now. We're getting this is kind of a dry time of year for us. And this summer I was like thinking, like, oh, we have June, we got 4 inches. July I had 5 inches. Oh, wow, maybe we're going to have an average rainfall summer, but nope, that's not going to happen. So
we're going to fall below again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's even possible. I mean, like, some people had, if you're like in the middle of central Itasca County, so if you're up towards Wabana or maybe up towards Marcel, you know, kind of the middle part of our county, we had a couple events, a couple of days where a heavy thunderstorm passed over those areas. But I will finish up about the same as last summer.
Yeah.
So about 9 inches of rain.
For the summer. And for the summer. What summer. You call meteorological summer?
Meteorological summer, June, July, August.
Yeah.
0.18 inches is my total for August so far.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm going to get any more.
I would have to check, but I'm sure I haven't any more than that. We're speaking with Bob Consemius. Bob is a meteorologist and a general expert on weather. And Bob, my next question is related to this rainfall. You said that Waseca got 10 inches of rain in a 24 or 36 hour period. Are there more examples? Are we getting more heavier rainfalls than, say, the average might be if you went back 30 years or 50 years? A 10-inch rainfall in a short period of time is a lot of water.
Yeah, because each degree Celsius you warm up the air, you get about 7% more moisture.
For every degree Celsius, 7% more moisture in the air.
Yep. So if you you know, generally you just take that literally. If you take a global temperature and just warm it up to 1 degree Celsius, which we've already exceeded, you're adding, you know, you're going to add 7% to your biggest rainfall events, you know, just very roughly. So,
wow.
Yeah, we'll rain more. So, and then we also tend to get more dry weather in between events. So, yeah, so it's kind of a characteristic. When it does rain, it rains pretty hard. And then when then you can get longer periods of time between rainfall events. Because in the atmosphere, you're just destabilized. You're keeping more heat down low in the atmosphere. And it actually cools off the upper level atmospheres just because of the radiative effects of increased CO2. And that'll tend to cool the stratosphere a bit. That's the layer above, say, like above 30,000 feet. And you'll warm layers below that.
Okay.
Wow. So, go ahead.
Do you have more?
Nope. Go ahead.
Okay. We got a text from Lisa in Balsam Township, and she's wondering about the possibility of auroras tonight and what time that might be and if the skies would be clear enough.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I did not look at the cloud forecast for tonight. But yeah, there's some possibility of auroras.
It's looking mostly clear in what my forecast is saying for tonight. Partly cloudy.
Yeah, we're in a little bit of a clear pattern. I was thinking about when I was looking at things last night yesterday for tonight. I was like, oh my gosh, it looks awfully cloudy. Yeah, there's a chance. The latest solar wind I looked at was we had an enhanced magnetic field, which means there's a feature in the sun that's kind of responsible for it. Often gives us auroras. And we have a high speed solar wind stream that could be giving some, and we have a favorable moon phase too. So if the skies are clear, then yeah, go out and take a look. Just keep an eye on it. That right now, I mean, I don't see that the magnetic field isn't pointed south, but it's a little stronger than it is on average. So, it could happen, you know, just keep an eye out.
Okay.
And one thing that's kind of nice with the weather pattern is there's been a bit of rain in Canada, and they've got more cloudiness up there too. So it really looks like the wildfire smoke has diminished a fair bit over the past week. So, and that we'll hopefully that's the case because we're going to be having quite a bit of air coming from Canada starting this weekend. Actually starting Friday.
Yeah, looking to be kind of cool again this weekend.
Yeah. The weather pattern switches to bring the coldest air, the coolest air in quite a while over Minnesota. And so we'll be having temperatures a bit below average. In fact, it seems rather cold for August. I think we'll be getting temperatures down into the 40s at night. It'll be maybe a little bit breezy, so maybe not getting into the 30s or anything like that. But definitely you will feel more like, okay, yeah, summer is winding down. We're getting some colder air again. So that'll be the case starting Friday as a cold front comes through. Probably will come through dry for most people. But there might be some scattered showers or thunderstorms around here and there. But I think the majority of people are going to see dry weather as it comes through. And then just several days of cool weather with winds from the north and northwest. And maybe a few clouds around too. So it'll feel a little bit more like late summer or early fall.
We've had reports of some fog in the area this morning. Is there anything in the weather picture? And they're forecasting fog again tomorrow morning. What's happening there? What are the physical characteristics of the formation of fog? And can we expect more with this colder weather?
So what happens with the colder weather is sometimes the lakes are still warm, are pretty warm. They're pretty much at their near their peak temperature for the year, and their warm weather, warm water will give off a bit of water vapor, and there's a lot of, like, if it's rained like it has a fair bit over parts of Minnesota, it tends to be a little more humid at ground level, so it's more, and the nights are also getting longer, so you have more time of radiational cooling. Brings us, those conditions all bring us more fog, and so you start to see that in August, and then as the cool air moves in, if you have a cool, calm morning, you'll see fog developing around the lakes because they're putting moisture back into the atmosphere, but it's also cold, so that moisture condenses more readily. So fog this morning is from just residual humid air around and lots of moisture at low levels. And then later on this week when we get colder weather, it's just, we call it a mixing fog. The water's still pretty warm. It's giving up heat and moisture to the atmosphere. That mixes with colder air and actually gives you fog that way.
Yeah, well, I'll keep my headlights on.
Okay, yeah.
Bob, yeah. As always, thanks for joining us. Thank you for your knowledge and for the fact that you're going to predict a little bit a chance if the sky's clear for some aurora tonight. I would say, yeah, given the, I don't know, moonrise must be after midnight by now.
Yeah, it is.
A couple days ago, it was around 11 o'clock or 11:30, so I know it's pushing. And it's getting dark, you know, at a time when I'm still awake. So maybe I'll go out and get lucky.
Right. Yep. Good luck for that.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. And
not 100% chance. I'd say maybe 1 in 3.
Okay.
So, I'd bet on 1 in 3. That's good for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But get a good view of the northern horizon and get out there before the moon gets up. And it may be a very dull glow, but you should be able to see something. You have to be very, very patient to wait until you get it'll brighten up for, you know, when you see auroras, they brighten up a little bit for, you know, for a few minutes and then they go back to the dull glow again.
Yeah.
It might be one of those nights. So you have to be kind of patient.
All right. Patience it is. Bob, thanks for joining us. We always enjoy your company and we look forward to having you back in the studios real soon.
Well, yep. I'll be there next week.
Great.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
That's Tornado Bob. We bring him in on Tuesday mornings to answer your questions about weather.
While we were listening to Bob, we got a text from Vincent in Lafayette, Indiana. He said, KAXE gives so much vital and fun information, community building, weather, and great variety in music. So much, I feel like I'm part of the community, yet I'm some 800 miles away. I love you guys. And on that same vein, we just got a donation from Ian in Brooklyn, New York. So thanks so much for that. We really appreciate the support and our listeners from far and wide.
Yeah, Vincent, if you ever get to northern Minnesota, believe me, the community here will welcome you with open arms. And I personally will welcome you if you let me know you're coming. I would love to meet you personally. Thanks for the kind words. Support for KAXE comes from Schroeder Log Home Supply, supplying wood homes and cabin owners with specialty sealants, preservatives, and wood finishes. More information at their Grand Rapids store or online at loghelp.com.
And we thank Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. A 26-year-old woman has died in an ATV crash in the Iron Range Off-Highway Vehicles State Recreation Area near Gilbert over the weekend. The Gilbert Police Department responded around 10 on Saturday morning. The woman, later identified as Tia Muller of Chisholm, died from being pinned underneath the ATV. The driver, 25-year-old Jonathan Muller, was airlifted to Duluth with serious injuries. Police learned the crash happened sometime the evening before, and the pair weren't discovered by other ATVers until the next day. Tia Muller was a volunteer firefighter with the Cherry Fire Department. The department said in a Facebook post that she will be truly missed. A 62-year-old Hopkins man has died following an ATV crash near Grand Rapids Sunday. The Itasca County Sheriff's Office states first responders located a man who was ejected from the vehicle on Prairie Lake Road around 8 p.m. Despite life-saving efforts, Rory Strachota was pronounced dead at the scene. Four girls were rescued after being stranded on Lake Superior near Silver Bay Saturday. The Lake County Sheriff's Office says the girls, ages 14, 13, 10, and 8, were paddleboarding to the smaller of two islands near Black Beach around 8 p.m. The girls lost their paddles, and waves on Lake Superior impeded immediate rescue efforts. Around 1 a.m. Sunday, a U.S. Coast Guard helicopter from Traverse City, Michigan, was able to transport the children from the island to a landing zone in the Silver Bay Business Park. Dozens of over 150-year-old tractors were on display over the weekend near the Itasca State Park for the Lake Itasca Pioneer Farmers 49th Annual Show. Farmers young and old from all over Minnesota and North Dakota took time out of a busy August to bring out their prairie and steam engines for the Case Expo. Exhibitor Ned Mars says he previously bought the scale model Case tractor on display for his 7-year-old daughter, who was splitting wood with her brother to feed the boiler. He says he values passing along these skills from generation to generation.
It's an important part of our heritage. I'm from North Dakota. My family originally homesteaded in southern North Dakota, and steam was actually what broke the prairie from where we were at.
Steam was an important fuel source in the pioneer days, and pioneers did their share of wood cutting. Steam also powers the Redby Mill. Lake Itasca Pioneer Farmers President Brian Misek says the mill is one of the show's more popular attractions.
The J. Neal's Redby Sawmill that was first put together in 1900 in Cass Lake, and it was later moved to Lower Red Lake in about 1930 and ran it through about 1962. And so it's a steam-operated sawmill, extremely unique.
The show is held the third weekend of August every year at the organization's 25-acre showgrounds. The Minnesota Department of Transportation will host an open house on Wednesday as the agency plans to reconstruct a section of downtown Crookston beginning in 2027. The redesigned corridor will include a lane reduction to accommodate wider sidewalks and a bicycle lane, and will remove three traffic signals while installing new pedestrian crossing beacons. The open house will be from 4:30 to 6:30 at Crookston City Hall. The Department of Employment and Economic Development awarded contamination cleanup and investigation grants to three northern Minnesota cities in its latest round of funding. Floodwood, Virginia, and Two Harbors will use the money to assess and clean up sites for private redevelopment. The grant covers up to 75% of the costs of removing contamination at approved polluted sites. The Floodwood West Infrastructure and Housing Expansion Project was awarded $50,000 for a site that's historically been used for agricultural cropland and possibly vehicle maintenance. The city plans to redevelop the site into a mixed-use area that will include 30 rental units, 34 owner-occupied units, light industrial facilities, and new public streets and utilities. The city expects the project will create 14 new jobs, retain 14 jobs, and increase the local tax base by $127,000. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, Phenology, and morning show teams. Sign up for the Buzz newsletter for the week's best stories and audio from your favorite community radio station. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
You can find more local news stories at our website, kaxc.org, and hear the latest edition of the Up North Report today at 5:30 during All Things Considered here on KAXC. Support for KAXE comes from Lady Sippers N.A. Bottle Shop in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only N.A. bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info at ladysippers.com. I'm Jennifer Barr with John Latimer. It's the Tuesday morning show coming up in just a few moments. We're going to talk with Ben Benoit from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe about traditional ecological knowledge with our producer, Mark Jacobs.
And I'm looking forward to this conversation. There's a lot to learn, and I'm anxious to find out what's coming up.
In the meantime, we're going to hear some new music from Flock of Dimes. This one's called Long After Midnight. Flock of Dimes. The song's called Long After Midnight here on the Tuesday morning show on KAXE.
Today, we're continuing our series on fires in Minnesota Forest with producer Mark Jacobs. Our guest is Ben Benoit with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, Division of Resource Management, to talk about traditional ecological knowledge, or TEK, T-E-K, regarding forests and fire. Good morning, Ben. And why don't you start off by describing your role with the Leech Lake Band?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. So I work for Leech Lake Band. I've worked for the tribe for about 10 years. I'm a tribal member from Leech Lake. I've worked as our wildlife biologist. I was the director of our environmental programming. It's kind of the regulatory programs, water, brownfields, for years. I was the natural resources director for a little while. And then I served as the Deer River District Ranger through an intergovernmental agreement with the Chippewa National Forest for 2 years. So that agreement ended in March and I came back to the tribe. And now I work in our executive branch. I oversee the special projects for Leech Lake.
Wow. You've certainly got a raft of experience. That's pretty impressive. CV there. So can you describe a little bit of the traditional ecological knowledge and how it applies to forests?
Certainly, yeah. So traditional ecological knowledge is really kind of place-based knowledge. So it's accumulated knowledges that have been developed and passed down by indigenous and local people for generations. And really it's kind of holistic in nature, understanding the relationship between living things and how different places of the forests interact and provide various resources or could how they've changed over time. So how it applies to forests is kind of a tough question, you know, and fire, I think, is just one chapter of a large book, you know, of knowledge. And so there's kind of this misconception, I think, that forests were kind of untamed and wild before, you know, this area was colonized. And that's not the case. You know, this forest has been managed by the Leech Lake Band and its ancestors for years. And so really utilizing that traditional ecological knowledge, understanding the land and how it functions and using tools like fire to create areas for people to live and to gather resources and to make sure medicines persist, that those type of actions. So I think traditional ecological knowledge is really the foundation of resource management in a lot of different ways, particularly for indigenous folks.
I've been studying phenology for 40 plus years now, and I always marvel at how the indigenous people, they were absolutely phenologists of the finest order. You would see a sign in the woods and it would tell you, okay, it's time to go and do that. It's time to go over there and do this because that thing happened. And those associations are largely lost to me because I don't, I didn't grow up with that sort of a background, but I am in awe of the kind of work that you're doing. I wonder if you could explain a little bit more about how fire was used and how they went about it. I mean, how did they not burn down their village?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess to tell that story, you know, like I think the forests today and the way that they're managed is a bit different than historically what you would see. And so, the kind of rows of pine trees that you see out in the forest today are not naturally occurring. You know, they're really a lot of land managers will try to group as many profitable trees as they can in one particular area. And so, like, it's like cramming a lot of people into a subway car, right? And so if you do have a fire in that type of event, you know, and everyone tries to evacuate the subway car all at the same time, not good things happen, right? And so I think historically you'd see more of like a woodland aesthetic where the trees aren't as compact. And so someone once told me that like prescribed fire should be like reggae music, like slow and steady and, you know, not like heavy metal where it's raging, you know, through the forest. And so I think that's kind of the fires you would see is kind of that slow crawl almost of fire across the landscape. And it was used to create areas, you know, to prep areas for gardening, to prep areas that are blueberries, to kind of prune those bushes and make them flourish, you know, to burn around your village, to reduce your bugs, you know, that are impacting your people, and then keep the brush down so you can see game and see what's coming. And so I think those are a lot of the reasons that fire, you know, existed historically. And so you can maintain some of those areas to access and to, you know, utilize for the resources that sustain us as a people.
Yeah, pretty amazing. I have a very good
your relationship with the Chippewa National Forest. You worked there as a district ranger. Was TEK applied to anything that was going on in the National Forest, any of their practices?
Oh, certainly, yeah. The In a few different ways. So fire, I think, is one of them. You know, the Forest Service and a lot of the land management agencies have a long history of putting out fires as soon as they can, right? And so trying to expand the prescribed fire program to reintroduce some of the fires in areas that are ecologically adapted to fire, I think was a big push and still is at the Chippewa National Forest. There's certainly risk associated with some of that. So you're prepping the forest beforehand to really try to limit the risk, whether that's through thinning of pine trees, trying to reduce the litter on the site before you have a fire go through there. TK has also been done to try to try to introduce more sunlight through the canopy. So when you have a lot of trees growing together really tightly, not a lot of sunlight can pierce through the canopy and reach the ground floor. And that's where a lot of the forbs and medicines and stuff that folks are looking for in the forest, it needs that sunlight to penetrate the canopy. So trying to open up those canopies, thin them out, save some of the trees that aren't necessarily merchantable in a value sense, but have a lot of value, whether traditionally or for forest health and ecological benefit. So I think that's been a lot of the conversations I was a part of when I worked at the Forest Service and are still going on today, because a lot of that work, is bigger than just one person.
We are talking with Ben Benoit from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Division of Resource Management, and we're learning about traditional ecological knowledge along with our producer for this series, Mark Jacobs.
Can you think of ways that we might increase the use of tech in forest development and in the ways of managing our forests into the future?
That's a good question. A lot of the traditional ecological knowledge you see is held with people. And so unlike, Western science where folks are publishing books about, ecological forest management, you don't see a lot of indigenous books published with TEK. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that. Historically, that it's just not something you're taught to share that way. And so I know I'm also been asked to join the Minnesota Forest Resource Council, which is a governor-led advisory group that serves the various forest regions throughout Minnesota, and that's been part of my effort there, is to be part of those conversations as this Minnesota Forest Resource Council is putting together the landscape plans for the different regions throughout Minnesota. I've been trying to, or at least would like to, introduce some of the traditional ecological knowledge concepts that, we try to utilize with the Chippewa National Forest here, and then throughout kind of our region, at least. Do I understand, was I taught traditional ecological knowledge in southern Minnesota? No. So am I the right shepherd to bring that information there? Certainly not. But hopefully we can get folks engaged in some of this work as we're talking about landscape planning, to introduce some of those ideas and share them out with landowners, with the counties, with the state of Minnesota, and the other land managers who are pretty active in managing the forests of Minnesota.
I think that brings
Ben,
up. Go ahead.
Ben, I was always curious, when we talk about TEK, it's always goes back to fire. But what was it more broad than that? I mean, obviously you had sugar bushes out there. Did you do things to manipulate those? Or what are some of the other things other than fire that were used?
Yeah, I think. Well, I think it's a lot of different aspects, and fire is certainly one tool you have kind of in that catalog of knowledge. But let me think of another example. So when can you start hunting deer in the season. And so like you're taught, oh, when you see fireflies like that. And so there's things like that where there's triggers in nature that will that you're taught on how to soundly manage some of these things. So whether it's seasonally or when you're gathering certain things, and so there's stories tied into all these natural processes that help kind of guide your life as Anishinaabe through those resources. So yeah, Mark, the good question. And yeah, it's certainly a very holistic thing. And I think fire, like I said, is just one chapter of kind of the traditional ecological knowledge book, and certainly a very important one because fire is a very valuable tool in forest management historically and today.
Ben, you've said that that a lot of these are stories passed from person to person. And you said that there's not a lot of publications of these things. I would think that for private landowners like myself, I've got 40 acres, I would dearly love to know some of the techniques and tricks that that have been working for centuries. It seems to me that you maybe ought to break down and write that book. So I can learn a few things before I pass on to the land of the ancestors.
Well, that's a good thought. I think part of the stigma, I guess, if you will, around that is a lot of this knowledge, like it's not really mine, you know, it was gifted to me. And so I don't know, like some values come into play, right? And then there's also tied to it is a bit of historical trauma where historically indigenous people and knowledge has been exploited for others. So I think that's at least how I understand some of that and some of what I've been taught. So
yeah, I do know about that sort of restrictions, and I'm sorry that it exists because there is so much to be learned and so many things that that even I could do on 40 acres that would make a difference in how my forest develops and how I develop. Marky,
right, yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Ben.
I think we all have a shared goal of seeing our forest prosper and leaving, you know, the forest better for the next generation. So, yeah, hopefully someday we can get to that place.
Mark, you got any more?
Well, yeah. Is there a concern that this knowledge is going to be lost if it's not written down, or are you confident that it's going to get passed down through enough people that it will persist over time?
Yeah, so the I think like the knowledge does exist, and it exists within various communities, tribal communities throughout the whole United States and probably the world. And so am I worried we'll lose it? Not really. I know there's been efforts by the Leech Lake Band to make sure that we're documenting the knowledge for ourselves kind of privately, not necessarily sharing that out in publications, but certainly trying to capture that to prevent that. And I think there's similar type efforts going on kind of throughout Indian country broadly, Mark.
I think it was interesting that you pointed out that, your knowledge is sort of like mine, a little bit local. If I went to southern Minnesota or if you went to southern Minnesota, we'd sort of be like, yeah, it's a neat place. How do you make it work? And you'd have to talk to the locals there and find out what they know. So there would be a lot of stories to be told, and each one would probably associate with each different sort of biome in the state.
Yeah, and I think at least my work with the Minnesota Forest Resource Council is kind of set up that way, where you're looking at kind of a regional landscape and then developing a plan specific to that place. So part of that planning is we pull together committees, regional landscape committees that really focus in on that area. And we're trying to find folks with local knowledge who understand best practices or traditional ecological knowledge or have something to contribute to that specific regional landscape to put together a kind of a comprehensive plan for folks to use as a resource as they're managing, whether they're private forests or county or state forests, kind of as a resource and guide for you. So I'm not sure if you've seen something like that, John, or not, but I'm sure I know there's one available for this, which we're in the North Central Landscape region here.
Yeah. I
was actually on the committee when we originally put together the North Central Committee years ago, Landscape Committee.
I'll have to do my homework and check it out. Ben, I want to thank you for joining us. I admire what you're doing, and I encourage you to continue. It's an important bit of work, and traditional ecological knowledge is something that we cannot lose.
Yeah, I appreciate everyone's time today. And if you guys are free, or your listeners are free this weekend, the Hinger Powwow is going on just north of Deer River. That'll be Saturday and Sunday. The grand entry is at 1 and 7 o'clock. So come on out and celebrate Indigenous culture and our people if you're around the area.
Thanks for the invitation,
good,
Ben.
Good to know. Yeah.
Thanks great. For joining us. Mark, as always, thank you for your hard work behind the scenes to organize these great conversations.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Support for the program comes from Sanford Health with primary care locations in Bemidji. And I just lost that screen.
Across Bemidji and the Upper Midwest, Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.